This is Whitney Gaskell interviewing Al Sunesson about the North Hills and what his family history is up there.
Whitney, I am the son of Coit Sunesson, the only child of Jonas, or John, as he was sometimes called, Sunesson, and his wife, Selma. John Sunesson and Selma were married and were not the homesteaders of the property that is immediately north of the Randolph Ranch, but my grandfather and grandmother were the first persons after the homesteader to settle and use that ranch, which they did for many years. My grandparents, the Sunesson grandparents, were both Swedish of origin, both from the old country, landed in New York, and they were not married. They didn't meet until they came to the United States. There were actually three children born of Jonas and Selma. The first child that Selma carried, she got bucked off a horse when she was well pregnant and lost the baby. At that time, they were not on the homestead or on the place next to Randolph's. And I don't have an exact year that Jonas and Selma took over, but that would be in property records available in Missoula County. Mm-hmm. I don't have that information. The ranch was a section in size, 640 acres. There are some hills, Ridge Hill, that to the east that drops over down into the Rattlesnake, and that is the east edge of the property up on the ridgeline, then it comes down into the Missoula Valley on the west. My grandfather, Jonas or John, was a very strong man in terms of physical stature. He was about 5'10 or 11 in height. Very muscular, a barrel chest, just the elements one would need to do the farming. Now one needs to go back and look at early Montana, not just Randolph, Sunesson, North Cove, or whatever you call it, area, but all of Montana. Those were days when there was very little mechanization in terms of modern machinery as we know it today. So we need to couch everything in mostly the human muscle or animal business for talking about power. Everything that was done was by draft horses. There was, and incidentally, on the Sunesson ranch that we're talking about, or farm, there never was, when my family, my heirs owned that, there were never was any electricity, there never was any telephone. There was, however, running water, which came down from a spring into the house. The house was built in 1913, well-constructed, two-story house. Had a porch, kitchen. I was in the house. Oh, incidentally, when I was a young person, and I was born in 1931 in Lincoln, Nebraska, my father, Coit, the only child of Jonas and Selma that lived, my father was a graduate of Montana State College in those days, in Bozeman. He went on to get a master's degree in agronomy, and he was a plant breeder for the United States. States Department of Agriculture. Following his graduation from his graduate degree in Manhattan, Kansas. Now, Coit was born, as my father, was born in 1903. There was another daughter born, but she died in childbirth.
Hmm. Al, would you let me stop you really quick for a second?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I had mentioned Jonas being very strong, physically strong. My grandmother, Selma, died in 1931, about 6 months after I was born, and my father came out for his mother's funeral, and cannot remember anything at 6 years or 6 months of age about the ranch. As I will relate, I have two personal remembrances when my father brought his family, my siblings and my mother, out to the ranch, and that was 1937 and also in 1940. There was, I think in those years in Montana, Jonas owning the ranch before the turn of the century, up until he sold it in 1945. I do not know the crops that were grown. I was on the property so infrequently, and as a child I have not great recollections, but I do recall my father each time taking us down to meet the Randolph family. My father was, as I told Whitney, the interviewer, that Mrs. Randolph was, to my father, considered almost like a second mother, a very fine lady and warm, supportive person of my father. Now, the Randolphs had three sons, and the youngest of those was named Bill, and I have met Bill when I returned to this area, the state of Montana, in 1987 with my mother. She and I went down to visit Bill Randolph on the Randolph property. He was still alive, and he told me a few things about my father and my grandfather. My father always wanted a dog, but my grandfather did not want any dogs on the property at that time. And it's interesting that as I grew up, we always had a dog because my father was not allowed to have a dog when he was a child. I think that had to came, the fact that dogs were not allowed came probably out of the fact that animals, like a dog, is not a productive animal generally. He's not like a horse or a cow or a pig that you can slaughter or something like that. A dog is something that eats food. My grandfather was a very thrifty person. I can remember when he visited me when I was a child in California, where my father was a plant breeder, then still with the United States part of agriculture, but he was on the campus at University of California, Davis. And during the winter times, this would be in the late 30s and early 40s, my grandfather would sometimes get on the train and come down with a big steamer trunk and spend several months with us in Davis. And I can remember that, speaking of thrift, that coming from the old country, generating your own wealth, nothing was really wasted. And I can remember that if we had nails, that he and I were as a child, and he'd help me build something, if a nail was bent, we'd straighten it rather than buy another one. Today, we just throw those things away. We think of nothing about carpenters, about tossing out a bent nail, but my grandfather was a nail straightener, but he was a generous man, and I think he was a very successful farmer. They bought an automobile that my father told me about. It was a Willys Overland, about the same time that the home was built, 1913, on the property. Later on, when I visited with my father brought us to the homestead there in 1940, my father then was driving a Model A, a 1930 Model A. Now, about my father and his relationship with the three boys who were children of the Randolph family. They all walked to school in Missoula, and I do not know the name of the grade school that they walked to. It may have been the Emerson School, but I'm not clear or certain about that. But it's about 3.5 or maybe even as much as 4 miles from the Randolph property, which is just down less than a quarter mile from the Sunnison house. My father would walk down from his house, pick up the Randolph boys, and they would all three walk into school in Missoula. There were no school buses. They did not go on horse, they walked. And I would hope that maybe someone in the Parks Department of City of Missoula would look for that trail that the boys built and my father spoke about, that he walked so many years on. That's the way they walked to town, all of them. And the trail begins right outside the Randolph home. And I think I saw the beginning of that trail just south of the Westerly building that Bill used to live in when he was there in 1987. I mentioned there was no electricity or phone on the Sunnison Ranch. My father grew up with illumination being just kerosene lamps, as what it was much of rural Montana when there was no electricity. Seems hard for my own career was in utilities, electric utilities and gas utilities. And it's hard to comprehend how one can live without those commodities today. But my grandparents and my father survived and prospered on that ranch. There was a vein of coal that runs up through the area of the Sunnison Ranch and on beyond, perhaps somewhat even on the Randolph Ranch, I'm not clear, but one of the things my grandfather gave me was a small miner's pick when I was quite young. And he and my father used to go down occasionally. It was low-quality coal, meaning didn't have high BTU content or much heat content, but they mined under a bluff on the road, the trail that led down to the Randolph Ranch. And go in there and dig some coal once in a while. My grandfather allowed Indians who came down from, I presume, Polson to camp on his property. And they camped, as I was told, just west or to the valley of the barn. Now, the present-day barn at the Sunnison X, the old Sunnison Ranch, the barn, I understand, has been moved slightly. The house has never been moved, but the barn has been moved slightly. But Indians, according to my father, came there regularly and were welcomed in their teepees. And my father even told me that he was pretty sure that at one occasion, one of the Indian people, Native Americans, apparently died. And my father believes, was buried there somewhere in that vicinity toward the valley from the ranch. There was no grave marking, no marking ever. Now, farm work, as I mentioned earlier, was quite difficult for settlers in Montana, those that came on the High Line as those here in the Missoula Valley. Horses being your draft animals being your only horse of source of power, pulling a moldboard plow, perhaps pulling a harrow, whatever they used. My father was not as strong, or I'd say basically as healthy as his father. My father had rheumatic fever as a child, which is a heart disease, and left him not crippled by any means, but he didn't have the vigor and vitality that his father had. So when my father, Coit Alfred, actually, and my name is Alfred, and so my middle name is, or his middle name is my first name. My father, not being a strong person, and he didn't really like animals or working with animals, so even though the farm was there, it could have been his, he chose to go for an academic career in Bozeman and use his head, if you will, and his great mind. And I might just pause there and say that my father was as a plant breeder in the area of wheat, barley, and oats for the USDA. He was quite productive in his research and development of new grains. And when he retired and returned to Montana to live out his retirement years, the university at Bozeman granted him a honorary doctorate, yes, which he was extremely proud of and felt the honor deeply and with great appreciation. During my father's growing up years, there were winter storms that came into the Missoula Valley. And when he and the Randolph boys were in school, as were with other children, if they lived some distance from the school or the town, most of them either had a relative or friend where if there was a blizzard that came in while they were there, and again, you know, there was no radios, no way of telling, no weather service. So if the weather just suddenly materializes and you're caught in a big storm in town, my father stayed with relatives. Then after the storm was over, he would walk home. He might stay one night, possibly as much as two. And my grandparents knew that if my father didn't come home after school and there was a storm, they knew where he was. They thought, they had to believe, they had to have faith, this is a pretty tough life, but then my father would go home. On one occasion, my father told me that he had stayed overnight in Missoula with relatives, and he thought the storm was over, and he began to walk home. And in those days, there was a clay pit where they mined the clay for bricks. There was a brickyard, and then they fired the bricks and they made the bricks down there. And so their pathway for my father and the Randolph boys back up the ranches was through this brickyard. And there was a man that my father referred to as a child. He said we called him the crazy man that lived down there in some kind of a cottage. He was a loner. My father knew he was there, but didn't know much about him. I think the boys were fearful of him. Certainly my father was not totally comfortable because he told me we called him the crazy man. However, my father was walking home the morning after the storm, this big blizzard, and the blizzard had not abated and it was still blowing and cold. My father sensed that his feet were freezing. So he stopped and knocked at the house of the crazy man. And the man came out and rubbed my father's feet, took off his shoes, and rubbed his feet so that he did not have frostbite on his feet. He was obviously not a crazy man. He was a thoughtful person. I have no name for that man, but I'm grateful. On the ranch where my father lived, they lived in the house, of course. The barn was probably at least 150, 200 feet away. I'm not really clear, and as I mentioned, I believe the barn has been relocated, but the barn was to the north of the house. My father said that the blizzards at the ranch and in this valley were so terrible that one could not see the barn from the house, and that the only way that you could find your way in a whiteout was to follow a rope line. And so they strung a rope from the house out to the barn to go out and feed the animals in these times. And sometimes these blizzards will last 3 days. I've been in Montana, it's now 2007. I've been here exactly 20 years this month. And I have yet to see storms of the magnitude that my father described so vividly, and so that were so ferocious. And so growing up in those years was not an easy time for either my father or the Randolphs. My grandfather and grandmother, Jonas or John and Selma, were Swedish-American Lutherans. I believe there's no longer that particular church in Missoula, but there was, and my father said he grew up regularly attending that church. In fact, my father had in those years, the attendance was very important, and several of the churches, mainline churches, used to award their children that came to Sunday school for perfect attendance. They would award them a pin, and then each pin, you could hang a bar under that pin for each year of perfect attendance you had after that. Now, given that the ranch is almost 4 miles, and my father would often walk, maybe the family would go in a buggy sometimes, but nevertheless, my father had a perfect attendance as a child of attendance at this Swedish-American Lutheran church. It was either 7 or 8 years. Now, when I think of my own children, who we took to church regularly with us, our attendance was not perfect, but was good, but never to the degree that my father had earned all of those credits. The Sunday school children loved Selma, my grandmother, apparently so much. And in her older age, they took up a collection, and I think it was about $15, father told me. They bought her a chair, a wooden chair. And this was her special chair that was in the church and where she could sit. And it was their way of saying thanks for her devotion. My grandfather Jonas had a way, he was strong, I mentioned. He was, I think, a good basic farmer. He apparently knew animals to the extent that many of the neighbors brought sick or animals that weren't feeling so well down to Jonas. And I cannot tell you how Jonas was able to cure them, but evidently he had some knowledge of patent medicines or what have you that he could use on animals. And so he cared for other people's animals too. Now today most of us have all our teeth. We go to dentists twice a year, get them filled if there's cavities, what have you. But back at the turn of the century, in the late 1800s, dentists were not, I think, on a regular fare for most people. And so if there were teeth, a dentist would pull your tooth, but there was not probably a good way to get it filled or filled very well. And so somewhere in the later years of his life, Jonas, or John Sunnison, had all his teeth pulled. And so when he came to visit us in California, he had a set of upper and lower false teeth, full set of false teeth, and he would put those teeth in a glass of water every night and soak them. Keep them fresh, I guess. So we have to say that the pioneer people in the early days, they didn't have all the things that we have. Certainly medical care, dental care. One time my grandfather told me that a traveling, practitioner of the arts came and said, "Hey, I'm a doctor." And in those days, even doctors, were people pretending to be doctors, selling services, weren't licensed. And he said he could take out my grandfather's tonsils. And so he started to put something down his throat, and then they had some, must have had some shears or something, or knife or something, to go get those tonsils. But he apparently got scared, and my grandfather started to bleed, which is what happens when you take out tonsils. In a hospital situation, no problem. But when you're on a ranch and somebody's there trying to take your tonsils out, and he's not skilled anyway, he stopped the procedure, and so my grandfather never got his tonsils out. And I think it's interesting he died with his tonsils. Jonas and Selma mentioned their regularity of attendance at the Swedish Lutheran Church. The sermons were preached, I was told, in Swedish. So my father, although he was born in Missoula on the ranch, had no language training in Swedish except that he learned what Swedish he did learn from attending the Swedish Lutheran Church. English was spoken at Selma and Jonas's home, so my father grew up speaking only English. But it's interesting that my grandfather, Jonas, coming from Sweden, not having much of an education, spoke Swedish and English, but he could only write, he could write better in Swedish than he could in English. Now there was a tradition between Jonas, my grandfather, and Coit, my father. Again, we were living in California since I moved there when I was five, and that's where my father was on the faculty at the, it's associated with the university there at Davis. And on every Sunday, my father would take in those days it was a penny postcard, 1 cent penny postcard. They went to 2 cents, later 3 cents, but take a postcard. My father would write in English the events of the week about his family, and he would mail it to Jonas in Missoula, Montana. And every Sunday, Jonas would take a postcard and he would write in Swedish the events that happened on the ranch and send that down to his son, Coit. And when that would come, we could not read it, we children, because we didn't know any Swedish at all. But my father, having learned a reasonable amount of Swedish, was not really proficient in speaking the language, but he could read it. And so he would tell us what my grandfather was doing. And so they exchanged Jonas writing in Swedish, my father writing in English. Each one could read the opposites when it was received and understand what went on. There were Sunday school picnics that I've seen pictures of. These would obviously be people from the Swedish American Lutheran Church who were invited out to the Sunnis Ranch, and there might have been, in some cases, 80 people coming out there for a picnic. They were all ladies dressed in their white outfits, their white dresses, and men and so forth. And so there was a social event there that was always, I'm sure, welcome. My father, although he did not stay on the ranch, he told me that it was very lonely for particularly women on Montana ranches, including his mother. You maybe got to town, or there were women who would get to town maybe once a week, once a month, I don't know what frequency, but it was in those early days buggies, later on by automobile. But there wasn't a social network for women, and so the Sunnisons, the Randolphs, were the neighbors, and it was a strong bond between them. But my father did tell me it was particularly lonesome for women who are more social in their needs, I think, than men. Men work, but women need dialogue with one another. I met the Randolph family, all of them that were... Bill was still home in the 30s and 40s. The oldest two Randolph children went on. One went on to be a vice president of a large Montana bakery. The other one, the second son, I believe, oldest, went on and was a plumber and did extremely well financially, helping build a naval base, I think, and do the plumbing on that as a civilian contractor during the World War II. Bill was the only one of the Randolph boys that remained on the ranch, and he was the last surviving heir. When my father brought us out to see his parents, or his parent, in the later years, since Selma died in 1931, when we came in 37, and when we came as a family also in 1940, we went down and always met the Randolphs, Mr. and Mrs. Randolph and Bill. And I can remember going into their ranch. They did not have what I would call a door. They had a piece of canvas hung in a door frame, and this canvas was pulled back and you went inside. There may have been other doors in the house, but I remember this one place that was not a wooden door, but just a canvas. And in there, one of the things I remember seeing was a Civil War rifle with a bayonet on it. And that, I was about 9 years old, probably, in 1940. And I always thought, wow, that'd be a nice thing to have for just a historic memory. I do not know personally much of the Randolphs except what my father told me, and that they settled there, and they apparently were in another part of the West, and they were cattle farmers, ranchers. But the freeze of 1888 destroyed all or most of their wealth that was on foot or on hoof, that you say, froze out, as they would say, and it was a terrible freeze. It's all in all the history books. And so I think they picked up what they had left and came further west into Montana and settled there on the, in what they call the Moon Randolph Ranch. Oh, my grandfather was a great, Jonas, was a great storyteller. He really was. And as a young man, he would come down and tell us children about lots of things in his life. It's hard to remember all the things he told us, but I remember being fascinated by his dialogue, and my father did say that, yes, Jonas was a good storyteller. He came over from Sweden. Well, this is one thing he did tell us that I can remember now. He came over on a boat with his older brother, one of his older brothers. Jonas was one of four boys in a family of, and there were some girls too, and ultimately all the family, the father, mother, all Jonas's parents and family came over. But anyway, Jonas was telling me that he remembered seeing sea serpents in the water, and I believed him. I don't really think, in all honesty, that there were sea serpents. I've never known of any or heard of any, but as a young boy, it was certainly a marvelous story to hear. Jonas was an honest man and an honest farmer. I think he must have had respect within the community, and I know that he sold some raspberries and probably eggs and possibly rhubarb and conceivably some fruit from the family orchard. He sold those to perhaps grocers in Montana, bartering for flour and other farm necessities. When the Sunnison Ranch was, well, when Jonas died, and my father being the only heir, my father did not choose to do the farming. He had another professional career. And so the ranch was sold to Kramer family.
Kramer
family.
Kramens.
And I think they paid for this full section of land, 640 acres, I think they paid about $5,000 for the house, the land. And so in terms of value, as particularly Missoula has grown, and real estate prices have increased, we can all say, yeah, we all should have kept that. But that's not the way life works. And so the money, the ranch was sold, and after 1945, other people were in possession of the ranch. And I have only returned one time. That was about 1990, when some of my own siblings were out, and they live in the east or midwest, and they wanted to see the old ranch. And so we called up the Spurlock family, I believe was then the heirs of the Kramer Ranch, and we were invited to come down, and so we sat and visited about the ranch a little bit and spent about 1 hour, very pleasant, with the people that now have possession of the property. I think that pretty much concludes what I have, but perhaps Whitney, who is the interviewer here and asked me to come down and do this oral history, if she has any questions or wants me to explain anything I might have said that she has notes on, I'd be glad to answer those.
Thank you. Well, Al, those are really great stories, and I guess I wanted to go back and ask you if you could elaborate on some of the things you mentioned. And one question I had was how you mentioned that your parents or your grandparents, Jonas and his wife Selma, came from Sweden and landed in New York City. And I was wondering how they moved from New York out to Montana, if that was their goal to become landowners, if you knew anything more about that part of the story.
Yes, I know something. Records are not perfect, but my understanding is that Jonas came out, worked on the railroad as it was being, it was built, and then went back to Sioux City, Iowa, where some of his other brothers and perhaps his parents at that time were living. So he had come west, but returned to Sioux City, Iowa, and that's where he met Selma. And then they were married, and I don't have a year on that. My brother has the wedding certificate down in Arizona, but I don't have that data. But anyway, so then they came west, and bought the ranch. Apparently Jonas had made enough money on the railroad working and whatever he did to buy the ranch from the homesteader. Mm-hmm. And then they began farming and building up the equity to build the house and raise a family and do the things that farmers did.
Mm-hmm. And so do you believe that was his ultimate goal, was to become a landowner in the United States, or was it something that happened?
Okay, I think that was probably the goal. Jonas's father, it would be my great-grandfather, I understood was a cobbler in Sweden, a cobbler making shoes. Again, that stuff of old country stuff. We just go to the store to buy a pair of shoes, but times in we would call it post-Civil War years, the 18, when Jonas was born in 1865, and he came over, I believe, about when he was 12 years old. So it'd be 1877. Those times in Europe were not good, and there were a lot of immigrants, not only from Scandinavia, but from all the countries of Europe. They landed here, and yes, they wanted to do something in America. They wanted to make a living, and I don't think Jonas grew up in his 12 years in Sweden, knew much maybe about farming, I'm not sure, but those days I guess you learned from your neighbor, and you raised the chickens and ate the eggs, and harvested, cleaned the chickens, take the feathers off and eat them. you had a cow, you got milk. So I think that was the goal, and Jonas did well. I think he was more prosperous than maybe some of the other people in that vicinity. That's not a brag, but I think it's, in my view, I think it's the truth. If you look at the Soonison home and you look at the Randolph home, there was a difference between them. So I think Jonas was probably a successful farmer, mm-hmm. hard worker, but my father was not, did not choose to follow that career.
Yeah. You mentioned that they had running water in their home that came from a spring that ran.
Yes.
Did it run by the house and then they diverted the water, or how did that work?
When I was on the ranch, I think it was 1940, because I, 37 is, I'm only 6 years old, I don't remember a lot, but I do remember walking up to that ridgeline that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And up the top of the ridgeline, there were some pools of water, and I recall three in my own memory, and these were self-feeding springs, open springs of water, and they would replenish themselves because they water came out of the ground. And my father and grandfather apparently dug a trench and buried a pipe. And they tapped into the bottom of this saucer up there, the spring, and laid the pipe and brought it down. And so as water falls, you get hydraulic pressure, so you have pressure in the house. And I have no idea how far that is. But you have to bury pipe in Montana at least 5 feet deep to get below the frost line. And my father said they didn't bury it deep enough the first time. And the pipe froze. The ground froze, the pipe froze, and the pipe split. And so they had to dig it again. When I was on the old homestead visiting the Spurlock family, when we were invited there, I noticed that they had a water coming from a spring that was out just east of the barn. I have no recollection as a child that there was any spring there at that time at that location. I thought it came from the ridgeline and was piped down. The Spurlocks had I saw running water coming out, and they had some sort of a collecting pond or vessel in which they got it and then piped it into the house. So they had plumbing, they had a toilet, water in the sink, they had a wood stove, they had one of those old, I can't remember, there was a name for those old wood stoves. There was a Hoosier in the house that was my grandmother's. A Hoosier is a kitchen cupboard that has a place where you keep flour and sugar, and this name Hoosier is one that's all over there. You go to an antique store and ask for a Hoosier or a picture of it, and it's what the wives prepared their flour and meals on for the most part.
Remarkable.
And incidentally, the Spurlock showed me the original Hoosier that was part of Jonas and Selma's ranch. It was sold with the house. And inside the Hoosier, they had just, when we got there, just few weeks before, they had had this piece of kitchen furniture refinished in town here in Missoula by a furniture rehabilitation person. And they had it back in the ranch, and they opened up the door, and inside there was some kind of a little, we would call it maybe plastic, but anyway, this plastic has some like our hands on a clock, and on this piece of plastic is written flour, sugar, and it's where the women of the day would write down what they wanted or needed for the kitchen. And so you'd move one hand over to knead eggs or something like that, or flour. And on this piece of plastic, when my father was 12 or 13 years old, he wrote the date, which was January 3rd, and the year, which might have been 19... Okay, he was born in 03, so it might have been 1913 or 1915. He wrote, "Coit is 10 or 12 years old." It's that piece of furniture is probably in the Spurlock possession still up there on the ranch, and there's a note written on there in my father's handwriting that he was 12 years old. Don't ask me why he did that, but it was there, and the Spurlock showed it to us. And it was not changed by the refinisher. It was still there.
I wanted to ask you about the trail your father mentioned to you about how he got to school. He said that him and the Randolph boys had built it. Was that simply by kind of trampling down an area, or did they actually dig out a little trail for themselves?
Yes, I understand they did. Whitney, they put stones on the corners, built up corners, and kicked the stones out of their way so that they had a worn trail, and so that several could walk abreast on this trail. And my guess is, I've seen personally, and many people have gone out and they looked at the Oregon Trail, where the settlers came in 1850, mm-hmm. 1849-50. And you can still see the wagon ruts in places where the Oregon Trail was, and they remain today. And I would think that those boys walking for 10 or more years into Missoula, that there would be evidence somewhere of that trail. I really believe it would you could find it. Well, I might just say one other thing. My father and the boys walked to school. My father told me that from the grade school, he was the only one in his grade school that went on to, I believe in those days it was called Missoula County High School. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the school was called. So he was the only one that went to high school and may have been one of the very few from his high school class that later went on to college. Education, most people grew up in the ranch, the kids worked hard. And he had big families, and so he had a lot of people to do the farm work. Mm-hmm. And education was, and for many people in those days, not a priority. But my father saw it, I think, as a way to escape the ranch or the farm and get a better life for himself, because he just didn't want to be a ranch owner.
And the other thing I was going to ask you about that your father probably knew quite a bit about was the mine on the Randolph Place. Now, they actually mined for coal and made a profit off of it for a while with professional miners. And it sounds like your father had a little pickaxe, and sometimes the boys would go in there and get it themselves. Did he describe any more of how they worked on the mine at all?
No, I know that they used the coal that they got for home heat. This is how you had to heat your homes with something. And no, I was not aware that the Randolphs might have had a coal mine on there. But on the Sunnison property, at that time, there was a vein of coal that my father pointed to me and says, this was ours, and we got coal out of here. So that usually coal runs in a vein. And so if the Randolphs found coal and they used theirs, so did the Sunnisons. Mm-hmm. And I think I was told one time by somebody that there was coal in that valley. There's other places where that vein of coal is, and it could be mined.
Hmm. And they would just go out and get it themselves?
Yes, yeah, just go out and, yeah. I mentioned a bluff that was the dirt overhang on the bluff. Dirt is on top of the coal vein, and so you don't want to dig enough coal out so that the dirt is going to fall on you and kill you. But I remember the coal being maybe 10, 12 feet below the surface of the ground. And I don't know. I don't know. It was just naturally exposed because of erosion. So you could see this vein of coal. But, that's how you kept warm.
Interesting. And I guess the last thing I just was wondering about, you mentioned what a wonderful storyteller your grandfather was, and I was wondering if you said that the sea serpent was a story that you could remember, if there were any others you could remember to pass on, anything about his life that, or his time at the ranch that you remember him talking about frequently, or a story that stuck with you.
There was an occasion that, this is not from Jonas, this is from my father. When my father was a young man, there was a full eclipse of the sun one day. And he said that on the ranch, I guess it would be the moon covering the sun, so you cannot see the sun. And this would be in the 20s, or there's going to be World War I times. So I can't remember the exact year. Probably pre-World War I. Anyway, the area went dark and the chickens went to bed on the ranch. And then the sun came out an hour later or so when the eclipse ended, and the chickens came out and did the cock-a-doodle-doo and this cluck-cluck-cluck again. So Just that's a story from my father, but Whitney, I'm sorry, I don't have any other recollections of my grandfather.
That's
with
fine.
His great storytelling, but it's I am now 76 years old, so you see, it's been a long time.
Well, that's great. If there's anything else you'd like to add, if there's not anything else, then I think we can wrap it up.
No, it's, I think what the city of Missoula did was a very forthright thing in preserving history, because the Randolph family never seemed to discard any tool or wagon or what have you, and I've seen those things there myself, and I think it's a wonderful way to look at early farming life, turn of the century in Montana, and if it was at the Randolphs, that same type of thing was where my father and grandfather grew up on their ranch. So, no, it's a pleasure. I hope that we've been able to contribute something useful to the history of
Definitely.
The area.
Definitely.